Before I forget, I have two corrections from the last two classes. One is what Michael corrected me on that Ayur-sangha does belong, if you split the Lamrim lineages into two, starting from Lord Buddha, then the Bodhisattva activity lineage, which is called Yachin Chipa, comes down first to
Buddha,
Maitreya. Then Maitreya, and I said Chenrai Sekha, I look at Kishnara, and then Michael said it's Maitreya, and then he's right.
I just give you a funny look, I didn't say a word.
No, but I heard it. And because you'd think it would be Chenrai Sekha, but anyway, it comes down to Maitreya and then to Ayur-sangha. So that's one correction from the first class. And then the second class that we mentioned, I think you mentioned yesterday, I discussed the I wrote the traditional verse for the seven diamond-like visions. Then we discussed the number of them, and then we discussed the order of them. And it looked like the order that came first and the order during the order were different. And they are. I mean, I checked the book. And then Gyaltsa Jay says, how come they're different, you know? And he says, you know, you could do it either way. And that's in your first... in your second reading that you don't have this, okay? So it was a good point. The Gyaltsa Jay says you can do it either way. So either way in your homework is okay. Meaning, switching 4 and 5, either way, okay? I mean, I remember getting up and saying it the way Gyaltsa Jay said it and then thinking that I lost the logic at a certain point. So we'll do it again, you know? You want to become your own future Buddha, so you can teach your own future Dharma to turn your own future direct realizers of emptiness, people into that, right? So that covers the first three. And then the question is between the Buddha that you need to help you do that, the outside Buddha, the one who already exists, and then the calm or the Buddha nature in you. So would that come Buddha nature first and outside Buddha first, or outside Buddha first and Buddha nature first? And that's where the question comes in. Let me get it straight. Some people say after the first three you go find an outside Buddha who inspires you to take your own inner seed and work on it. Some people say you think about your own inner seed and want to become a Buddha, and then you go to an outside Buddha who can teach you and like that. So either way you do on the homework is fine. And something that you would spend 6 hours debating in the debate ground with no resolution, just for fun, you know. Okay. So today we're on. So we're going to work slowly through the seven diamond-like visions, which means first of all, discussing the three jewels, right? The three jewels. And today I think we're going to delve into the question of one of the main topics today will be why, when he discussed the three jewels, did he choose the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha that you want to become? Because they don't exist yet. I mean, theoretically, for most of us. Or maybe for me, at least. Okay? They don't exist yet. So, I mean, taking refuge, doesn't it imply taking refuge in someone outside of you? And isn't that even part of the definition? You know, you go to refuge to someone outside of you because of two causes, fear, and you think they might be able to help you, right? So, why does he start out calling the Buddha, Dharma, Sangha that you are going to become the three jewels, which are the objects of refuge, right? So we're going to go into that a little bit today. We have to start Gurgumare. Say Gurgumare.
Gurgumare.
Which means?
Don't carve it.
No need to carve it, just write it. Okay. Sorry, just kidding, you know. I started out that way. Chedu. Chedu Jawa is an idiom in Tibetan. Chedu Jawa means the ideal or the one that the teaching was meant for. And Dulja means student or disciple. Okay, so this whole phrase means the student that the Uttara Tantra was meant for. The student that the Uttara Tantra was designed for. And you know that Dul means to discipline. Or to tame a wild horse, for example, it's called dul. So the word disciple is the same in Tibetan as it is in English. Disciple meaning the one who needs to be disciplined, or tamed, or broken. okay? Not fun, but the result is cool. So, Chedajari Dolje means the ideal disciple or the perfect disciple that this book was meant for. And this is very common in the ancient teachings. Each book is designed, each teaching, as you know from Chang'e, is designed for a particular group of students. It's like, I used to play jazz in college, and the only jobs we could get, because we weren't that normal, was in this weird bar outside of the college. And you would get up, and then depending on who was listening, you would play differently. You see, like, you start a song, and then you see the reaction. And then if the audience feeds you back, then you go higher and higher. And if they're all just drinking and fighting and stuff, trying to get up on the stage, you know, your music actually goes to a lower level, because you're just trying to reach something in them, right? And it's the same for a teacher. As you know who have tried to teach, you know, you get up, you see how the eyes look, you know, or how the body language is, and then if it's good, you go higher. And if it's not so good, you go down a few notches, you know. And then that creates problems 1,000 years later when they go through Winston's teachings, the videos, you know, and they're like, I don't get it, you know. First he said this was true, and then 2 days later at a different teaching he said something else was true. And that's why you get into fights about Chang'e or how to interpret what a teacher said. So each major teaching or each major book has the Lord Buddha or Lord Maitreya in this case, they have somebody in mind for this book that's called Chedajari Dolje. They write this book or they dictate this book to whom? Ayasanga in Tushita Heaven, right? And they have certain people in mind. So I'm going to tell you what that kind of person is for this book, because it has to do with the first three diamond-like visions. Okay. Say, Thichen. Thichen. Rikchen. The first part of a student for whom this book was meant is that they must be Thichen Rikchen. Thichen means Mahayana. Big capacity people. Big capacity. Rik means type or family. Rikchen means belongs to the family or belongs to the type. Tering Sangi Riksuke, Sangi Se Sitagi Uto. Right? Today you have Sangi Riksuke, Sangi Se Sitagi Riksuke. You've entered the family of the Buddhas, right? So first they should be a Buddha Bodhisattva family. In other words, if you're in this room, if you made it all the way out here in the middle of nowhere, it's not by accident. Okay, it's by millions of lifetimes of praying that you could learn this book. Okay, it's from millions of lifetimes of trying to develop compassion for other people, or you wouldn't be here. You wouldn't, karmically, you wouldn't have made it into this room. So you have this. You are Thichen Rinchen if you made it this far. You have deep within you a calm or a seed that wants to be able to serve every living creature in many planets. Countless planets. So you have that. And that's the first part that makes you able to sit here to be a student of this class. Okay? Wang Nun. Say Wang Nun. Wang means power. I think you know, like the Wang is an initiation, it's called Wang. And then Wang Nun means very, very sharp powers, meaning you have a high Dharma IQ. And you know, I've mentioned it many times. Wang Nun doesn't mean worldly IQ, you know, like you meet many people who are very capable people, very intelligent in a worldly way, very capable, they can do anything in business and things like that, but their Dharma IQ can be zero. And then you meet other people who have a high Dharma IQ that can't, like, drive a car or something like that, you know, they just run into things. And and then you meet many people who have both, actually. But what we're talking about is a high Dharma IQ. High Dharma IQ. How does that manifest itself? I mean, they believe higher things, and they are motivated to do higher things. They are faced with a lifetime of consuming, or a lifetime of trying to get liberated and helping others in an ultimate way, and they just naturally gravitate towards the second. Okay. Does that mean they don't have jobs? No, not necessarily. They could be president of a big corporation. But they, in the back of their mind and in their heart, their motivation is always that they should do this to help other people. And then they have this drive to learn the Dharma well, practice well, meditate well, retreat well. So that makes them Wangnun. So you can say high Dharma IQ, okay? You have to have this to be a student in this class, okay? To be a student of the Uttara Tantra. The Uttara Tantra's Chedijar Dulja, the ideal student, the student for whom this book was designed, are people who display two qualities. They have like compassion, they are Mahayana, family type of people. They have deep in their hearts the belief that they could become the next Buddha. They could become Maitreya. They will be Maitreya. They believe that. And then secondly, they have this high Dharma IQ, which is typified by being attracted to holy activities, meditation, retreat, study, serving other people. Okay? That kind of person is ideal for this book. Does that mean that other people can't listen to this book? Is Tantra secret?
Tantra?
Yeah.
Yes.
Tantra means secret, right? The word means secret. But it's a self-keeping secret, right? I mean, you can show a tantric book to somebody. Somebody who's not hasn't had initiation can go and peek in a tantric book. They just won't get it. Like, they'll write a PhD thesis about it. Okay? Or maybe, you know, that's not a Kaba, right? Not everyone who writes a PhD thesis about Dharma is doing so for their own reasons. But I'm just saying, in case, okay? Or they might just think it's crazy or even dirty or wrong, okay? And so, in that way, Tantra is a secret which keeps itself. And in the same way, teachings on the higher way, like something like the Uttara Tantra, people just wouldn't get it. They wouldn't be, first of all, most people who didn't have come, who weren't this kind of student, they wouldn't be attracted to it. You know, you could start up, get up, start to give a lecture about it, and they would like fall asleep. Or leave and not come back, you know. Or fight with you and then leave, you know. And that's a very typical for someone who isn't up to this level of student. So in a way, the books, the secrets keep themselves. And it's not that Lord Buddha said these students, anybody who wasn't this student couldn't come to that teaching. It was just that if they came, they weren't attracted to it. Or they even heard a lower teaching. Which is where the idea of lower kinds of emptiness comes in the mind-only school and in the lower half of the middle-way school. So that's the kind of student that we would teach this book to. Then Gyaltabje goes on to say that a Chedijar Dulja, the ideal student for this book, would be, you could tell them from three different characteristics. So I'm going to go through those three characteristics. These are the three that are on your homework. Okay. First one. Say Gupa.
Gupa.
Gupa means necessity. Necessity. This thing must happen. This thing must happen. Okay. The ideal student for this scripture is ideal, first of all, says Gyaltabje, because they realize there's a gupa. Something's gotta happen. What's that? I gotta do something about all the pain in the world. I gotta do something. I have to try to do something about all the pain in the world. Okay? There are two qualities there inside gupa, right? These are like subsets of gupa, right? One would be nyingje. So the debate would go like this, okay? It'd be like this. I'll pick on Michael, really. Well, what you think? What's the first quality that a disciple for the which the Uttara Tantra was specifically designed, what's the first quality they should have?
Belongs to the Mahayana family.
In general. Yeah, that's in general. And then secondly?
High spiritual IQ.
Yeah, high spiritual IQ. And then if the homework said, now give me the three or four qualities that they have, you'd go on to here. So what would be the first one?
Compassion.
Well, it'd be gupa.
Okay, gupa is necessity.
Yeah, like they're driven. They say, something's got to happen. Something's got to happen. You know? Why are they driven? You see, that's a Tohono thing. Why do they have that first quality, driven? Because they got ninje. They got ninje. What's ninje? Karuna.
Great compassion.
Compassion. Okay. Compassion difference from jhampa, love, how? Anybody?
Yeah. When it's,
yeah?
One is wanting to give them everything they need, the other one is wanting to take away all their stuff.
Yeah, which one is this?
Compassion is wanting to take away all their stuff.
Yeah, so ninje is driven by wanting to take away other people's problems. And then jhampa, which happens to be the name from Maitreya, is wanting to, after you take away their trouble, then give them everything they want. Okay. But if you ask me, how come the ideal student for Uttara Tantra recognizes some necessity, something's going to happen? Well, first of all, they have ninja. Okay. First of all, they're worried about the suffering of the world. Okay. You wouldn't be in this room if you weren't that. Okay. You might be in a New York class because some guys walked in following the cute girls who came to class. I won't name any names. who later became a very, very fine student.
Skillful.
Yeah, skillful me. But if you're this far, this is out in the desert, you know, ninja.
Yeah.
You have some concern. You have some concern for other people's suffering. Okay? And then B, you know this from last night. Say laksam.
Laksam.
Mercedes.
Responsibility?
Yeah. Personal responsibility. I'll do it myself. We talked about it last night with your do-gooder company, right? No one else helps me, I'll do it myself. And you know, you don't have to go very far in the Dharma business before you bump into the necessity of laksam. Okay? You know, right? Earl, with the yurts, for example. You know, taking down the yurts. I mean, if you're going to do the taking down the yurts, you got to decide, if I'm the last person out in this hellhole, taking them down, I don't care. I'm sticking it out, you know. And for that, laksam. You gotta have laksam. Okay, laksam means I'll do it myself, you know. And it comes in the seven steps to developing bodhicitta. It's just before you get bodhicitta. It's the last thing before. Am I right? Yeah, just before bodhicitta. Okay. So, if you're gonna be the student for whom this teaching was meant. Yeah, and we say, what are the three qualities? And the first one is, you see some necessity going on. You've got to do something. Okay? What drives you to that necessity? Karuna. You see the suffering of people. You want to do something about it. Faksam. I'll do goddamn well do it myself. If nobody else helps me, nobody else pitches in. If everybody, in the scriptures it says, if everybody rises and becomes my enemy and tells me I'm crazy and fights against me, I don't care. I'll get it done. I'll do it. They'll thank me later. Okay? Faksam. Okay? Now the second quality, right, of the three.
Right.
Okay? First we had necessity and that had under it these two qualities.
Mm-hmm.
Now the second main quality. What was that? Oh, you? Am I on two or B? Two.
Right? You're on two.
Okay. This is where the homework gets messed up usually. Say nirpa.
Nirpa.
Right? This sag gets causes it to be lengthened slightly. Nirpa.
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 Like Nutnik would have a ta. Nutnik. Right? Nirpa. Okay. Nirpa means what? Anybody? Ability. The ability. Okay? Potential. Potential. Huh? I'm going to pull the plug on it. I don't know, which one is it, you know?
The one that goes into the phone, at the bottom.
Yeah. Hopefully we'll forget to plug it back in. Nipa means the Chedijara Dilja, the disciple for whom the Uttara Tantra was designed, which is you guys. Oh, come on, you're talking about the early Indian disciples. Am I? I mean, Maitreya could only see... today, you know, I mean, my chair can't look ahead 2,000 years and say, or 1,700 years, and say, they're going to be sitting there in Dharma East, you know, got to get this ready for them. It's just as, you're just as valid as the first disciples of that book. You are disciples, you are Chittajaya Dujas of the Uttara Tantra. Because you see the Nirpa having seen the Gupta. Okay? You saw the necessity for something to happen. And now you see the nipa. Nipa means potential, means it can happen. I see it can happen. Okay? Nipa means I not only see it has to happen, I see it can happen. Okay? And Gyaltsebje says to me, I mean, I get thrills up the back of my spine when I read why he thinks nipa is possible. A Chittajara Dulja like you, ideal student for this book, they see there's a potential for Buddhahood happening because, it's the reason why there's nipa, like the other two were the reason why there's gupa. They see there's potential because they don't need topa.
They
perceive emptiness. Okay? Because they perceive emptiness. Okay? I love that. That's very ACI. That's very worldview. Okay? They see Buddhahood is possible. I mean, one thing they know, it's got to be done. Gupa. And they see it's possible. Nipa. Why? Because they don't need topa. Okay? So, you're ready. Debate. Elila. If someone is a perfect student for the entire tantra, right? It must have already perceived emptiness. What's up? Because they see the potential for Buddha. They see it's possible. And that's only because there's Gyaltsebje that they don't need topa. You contradict that description.
He didn't say directly. He just said.
I didn't say he said directly, and he didn't say he said directly. You're thinking he said directly.
No, I thought you were saying he said directly.
I didn't say directly. He said directly.
Yeah. Because of the
confusion. So Tony told him, yeah. So the Chittajaya Dujas in this room all the perceived emptiness. What's up? Talk about that. So they're all ions, right?
Not necessarily.
Good. Kyabamachi. So just because you perceive emptiness doesn't mean you perceive emptiness?
Right.
Gotcha.
Doesn't mean you perceive emptiness directly.
Ah, I didn't say that. No, but you're right. Okay. But that's where you would screw the guy up again. Yeah, but anyway, yeah, it's not true that just because you've seen emptiness, you've seen it directly. Okay? So what Gyaltsebje is saying is very powerful. You can't be the ideal student for this book if you don't grasp that Buddhahood is possible because you understand emptiness. You understand that your own being is empty. And that if you collected the right karma by keeping your book nicely, your vow, you would perceive that empty screen as Maitreya. And if you get it, you know, everybody in this room gets that, right? Anybody who doesn't get it, raise their hand. You get that your own being is an empty screen. You get that if you keep your vows, do retreats, do meditation, help Diamond Mountain happen, right? For others. That you will see this being become Maitreya. Okay? You get that. So you get the nupa. You get the possibility. And that's why you're the special student for this book, and that happens to be why you end up in this room at this moment, okay? And that's the... You see the potential for becoming Maitreya. Like, people in this room didn't start laughing when I said you're all going to be Maitreya. You know, you're just kind of wondering how it's going to happen. But you understand the nupa, right? You know the potential. You know the potential. And you're thinking, well, I cut my meditation short this morning, I didn't do it at all. You know, you're wondering how that's going to happen. you have to keep it up. Okay. So, nupa. Third quality of that student. Say, topar.
Topar.
Cha.
Cha.
Topar.
Topar.
Cha.
Cha.
Cha means, I'm going to do it.
I'm
going to
do it. But
top,
talent?
That's top.
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 Achieve.
Which, so it means what? Top or cha?
I'm going to achieve it.
I'm going to do it. You know? damn it, I'm going to do it. Topaja. Okay. That comes after Gopa and Nupa. Right? Gopa, this thing's got to get done. Nupa, it's possible because things are empty. Even I'm empty. Topaja, I'm going to do it. I'm going to attain. I will be the next my turn. Ah, sorry, done my turn. Right? I will be my turn. You have to think like that. Okay? My turn. I will be my turn. Pretty much we have already perfect circumstances. You have great trials ahead of us to make this place happen. It's a lot of work for a few people. Later people will come and complain about the lemonade we said, right? And but we're the ones who have to build the houses and get the lemonade ready. And so in a way we have the most work to do. But that's why you're here and you're a Topaja type of person, you know? I'll get it done. I'll do it. Topaja. Okay? Gyaltaja throws in a fourth quality. Okay?
Where do the three come from if the Gyaltaja throws in a fourth?
You'll see why.
Okay.
You'll see why. Oops. Let me see how to spell it exactly. Say Wang Tu.
Wang Tu.
Min.
Min.
Wang Tu.
Wang Tu.
Min.
Min.
They ain't Min. Wang, Dharma intellect. Tu. What's Tu? Dumb. Low. Dull. Dull, actually. Okay? They are not dull Dharma IQ. Dull spiritual intellect. Okay? And then Gyaltaja goes on to say, what does it mean to be a Dharma dummy? Okay? What does it mean? It means saying Topaja without saying Gopa and Nupa. It's number three without number one and number two. Topaja without Gopa and Nupa, which means, oh, I will attain Buddhahood for all living beings, without seeing that there's a necessity and without seeing how it's going to happen. And that's what makes you a less qualified student for this book, okay? Like, oh, you run around saying you're a Buddhist. You run around saying, you know, I'd like to be a Buddhist. I'd like to achieve Buddhahood. But you don't really appreciate how much the world is suffering. And you don't really appreciate that it's totally possible because I'm empty, okay? You've got to have those two, or else you're a Wang Tu, okay? You're doing it without really understanding it, and that makes you what they call dull faculties, okay? And I think, personally, that you guys have you've been through so many classes on karma and emptiness that you really, really get the Nupa part. I think that's where most people, I think every person outside of Tibet and India who is attracted to Buddhism, in my experience, 95% of them are coming because someone close to them died, they saw some terrible accident, they themselves have cancer. You know, they've seen suffering and then they turn to the Dharma. But it's the Nupa part where people fall, right? It's the Nupa part. Like, they kind of dimly understand that there was a Buddha and that, you know, probably I can become a Buddha. But they are more in this mindset of a Buddha like God, you know? And that's a very big difference between the religion I grew up with and the Dharma I came to embrace, you know? God is outside of you. God, you cannot become God. To say you could become God would be almost irreverent or
blasphemous.
But in Buddhism, the whole point is quite different. And isn't it quite different in which book?
Mahayana.
It starts out with three diamond-like visions of what?
Mm-hmm. The future.
Your future, right? That's the whole point. That's why Gyaltaja is rubbing in this thing. This whole book starts out, you don't go to refuge to Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha who are in India 2,500 years ago. You don't go to refuge to some Buddhist monks who have funny-looking eyes and different culture, drink salty tea and bang on weird drums and stuff. You don't go to refuge in that. You're going, the highest student, the student of highest intellect, is going for refuge in what?
Their future.
Their own Buddhahood. What they will become for the world. And that's really powerful. That's really powerful. So you're not this kind of Wang Tu. You totally see how it's possible. And that's totally the goal of your life. And as we're about to see in this class, for Gyaltsebje, that's what refuge means. That's what refuge means. That's why he put the three jewels first. And that's why the three jewels are the ones that you're going to become. Okay? For him, that's the whole point of religion, is to worship the thing you're going to become and to strive towards that and to see the nirpa, see how it's going to happen because you are empty. Okay? So it's not like in this class, for people of your intellectual capacity, right? I wouldn't say this out in Joshua Baptist Church when Mercedes and Christy and I go to do our presentations there. We're not going to, you know, emphasize that the goal of this class is that you become God or something like that. Not at the beginning, anyway. But it's very appropriate in a class of Chittijaya Dujas, people who are special disciples. You know, you grasp the need and you grasp the possibility because you understand emptiness, okay? And you have Ningje. So therefore, you don't qualify as one of these duller intellect students. And you now got a taste for why the first three of the seven diamond visions are the three jewels that you are going to become, okay? Let's see what comes next. This is a part that I really like of the entire tantra. And here I'm going to put the Sanskrit, since you guys learned Sanskrit today. Your Sanskrit teacher will go over why it looks funny. Okay? When two consonants bump together in Sanskrit, they create a new letter, unfortunately. Okay? So this is the T, and this is the N. But anyway, it turns out we're not in the... Okay. As we said in the Yoga Sutra teaching, Ratna comes from a root Ra, which ultimately means to give or bestow or have value, came into Latin as res, and into the English word reality, meaning something real, something of value, something substantial. Okay. And the Tibetans chose to translate it as koincho. Say koincho. This is like the only word in Tibetan where you have this thing called a diphthong where you say an oi sound, oi, like oi gavol, right? So it should have been pronounced koincho. But just by, because of some historical accident, this single word is pronounced koincho. Say koincho.
Koincho.
Koincho. Kun, when you treat it by itself, it's kun. Kunba means rare. Rare. Okay? So this one means rare. Chok means what?
Supreme.
Supreme. Nice. It's getting harder to teach you guys, you know. 3 years ago, you weren't as... you put a little heat on me. Okay. Koin chok. Koin means rare. Chok means supreme. Now, this is called the older period of translation in Tibet. It occurred, I believe the line, dividing line is before Long Dharma. Long Dharma was the king who destroyed Buddhism in Tibet just after it got started. And then they had to start over again. But in the early translation period, the Tibetans were very creative in translating Sanskrit. And then they would make up words like Muni, which literally means the silent one, got translated Pelmalai as what? In the back seat of the car there in Flagstaff. Yeah, good guess. Chumdende, which means the one who defeated the enemy, possesses the qualities, and has gone beyond transcendent. You know, it's this long, they just stuck together a bunch of words and made a new word, you know. Koinjok is one of those. Like the word for the three jewels, Tri Ratna, in Tibetan, is the rare supremes. It sounds like Diana Ross and I used to translate it as rare supremes, but then people made fun of me, so I changed it to three jewels. But
studio outtakes.
Yeah, rare supremes. But these are this is the word for like koincho sum would be what? Koincho sum.
Three jewels.
And when a Tibetan gets mad they say koincho sum. You know, it's like, Jesus Christ. You know, and it's funny, like the first few times you hear it, you're like...
That's funny.
Now you know what to say when you get mad in Tibet. Of course, you shouldn't say that. Now, I always wondered why they called it, how did they get the coin, how did they get the chunk, you know? Like, is that just something they made up? And what's cool is that the Uttara Tantra says you should translate it as coin chunk. You know, the Uttara Tantra says the three jewels are kun, and they're chunk, and coin chunk's not a bad way to translate it. So the Tibetans were actually taking it from this scripture. And that, to me, that's really exciting to see. So you'll have the root text in your reading, and it's a verse in the Uttara Tantra. But Maitreya gives six reasons why the jewels are kun and why they're chok. And I thought we'd go that, through that for fun, because I think we'll go through half the six, then take a break, and then come through the other half.
Six reasons why they're supreme.
Yeah, and why they're rare. You know, why are the three jewels, which is who?
Me.
You gotta go like this. Me. Me. Okay, like we're not just going through this for fun because there's six categories and the loop is like categories and you know, stuff like that. Okay, it's like these are six qualities you're going to have. These are six qualities that apply to you, and you have to think about that. Okay, you have to become Koin Chok. The whole point of the first three diamond visions, you have to become the three jewels. So let's see what you got to become. Why are you going to be rare? Why are you going to be supreme? First reason. Say Juma.
Juma.
Kun. Kun. See, when the kun gets cut off of coin chunk, you don't say coin anymore, you say kun. Okay? So, that's why it's not coin. Juma kun means, Juma means happens. Kun means only
rarely.
Rarely. Okay? Utpada in Sanskrit. And then I was interested about the kun, it's Durlabha. Which we studied, we were memorizing a text then. It said that people who can do a full lotus for a long period of time are Durlabha in the loka. Lokasya Durlabha, meaning what?
Hard
to find. Durlabha means hard to come by. Okay. Yeah, hard to come by. You know, we experienced that through your retreat. We were seeing like we could do it for an hour and a half, 2 hours. Long story. Juma kun means doesn't happen very often, only rarely happens. And then Gyaltabjay says, most people in the entire world don't have the kelwa to see the three jewels. They don't have the kelwa to ever run into the three jewels. What's kelwa? Good karma. Good karma. You know? They just don't have it. They are like the people in the town that Asanga ran into carrying Maitreya on his shoulders. And what did they see?
Nothing.
Mostly nothing. Yeah. Mostly nothing. Okay? There's just this crazy guy. I mean, every time I feel like I'm getting called crazy too much, I think of a sangha running around town with Maitreya on his shoulders. And it comforts me. So like, okay. They just couldn't see anything. You know, and they said, you know, they probably would have locked him up in Nadir, right?
Yeah.
He's running around town screaming about this guy on his shoulders.
Yeah, they would have.
So Juma kun. Juma kun means the three jewels happen only rarely in the world, meaning, listen, they're here all the time, but people can't see them because they don't have the kelwa. And people don't meet them. And people don't run into them. I also gave me a look like, are they here all the time? Good debate. Are they here all the time?
Who's proceeding?
Good. Nice. Who's proceeding? Good, very nice. It's actually a sort of a self-existent thing. It's an error of worldview to say they're here all the time. That's like saying my lama is really a tantric deity. You know, it's an error in worldview to say that.
But like emptiness.
They're really what?
I don't perceive emptiness, but everything has its own emptiness. It's there regardless of my perception of it. So the Buddha. I thought we talked about this a couple times last week.
I
don't have to directly perceive an object's emptiness to understand that it has an emptiness. So I don't have to directly see a Buddha in the room to suppose that there's a Buddha on every atom.
You guys debated in the debate ground. Okay. And there should be a debate ground here. We will have a debate ground. And that'll be one of the main reasons to be a Dhamma Mountain. There will be a debate ground. You guys discussing with each other once a week, right?
Yeah, at least all day.
Okay, no, you can do it in the car, you can do it while you're working, you can do it anytime, but you've got to do it. It's a 100% difference. The people in the Sama Mandir class, I think, realize that. You know? Like, you, if you just talk it over with somebody in plain normal English for 20 minutes while you're washing dishes or something, it just sticks in your mind really good. Later, in the fall of 2004, it'll be a requirement to debate once between classes. Okay? So everybody will move out before that, but anyway. Do you look good? Second quality. Say, Chime.
Chime.
In Sanskrit, it's Nirmala, and you'll go over that with yours if you want to in your Sanskrit class before class. But Chi means impurity or stink, and Me means no stink. Okay? So it means spotless or unpolluted or untainted, like that. The Sanskrit nirmala, the mala, has come into English as, in what word can you guess? Something that means bad.
Malcontent,
malevolent, malnutrition, meaning bad. Like mal in French, does it mean bad?
No.
Yeah. So it's like that. Yeah. Ultimately, it probably relates to mort also. Yeah. So it just means bad. Not bad. No stink. And then Gyatso Jay says a very interesting thing. You know, you can get these books where they say, oh, the Buddha Dharma Sangha is immaculate and wonderful and therefore to me. Okay? Gyatso Jay says, no. They are immaculate in the sense that they don't have, what should we say? I don't remember what I meant. They don't have two imperfections. They are free of two imperfections. Okay? First one is being unable to protect you. And to me that's very profound, you know? Like I met a person in the last week who's dying. You know? I asked specifically to talk to them because I know they're dying. I mean very shortly dying. And they all know it. Everyone knows it. And so you want to offer them some protection. Right? I mean, it's too late, actually. It's too late to do anything. It hasn't happened yet, but the time it takes to practice the open teachings, the time it takes to practice the secret teachings, the time it takes to master the inner channels, the work with the chakras, the time it takes to build up that inner body with very difficult practices, there's just no time. The person could go into retreat now and it's too late. So there's all these worldly kinds of protection that they're going to. You know, oh, I went to a specialist. I had my entire blood taken out, screened, radiated, put back into my body. You know, I had, now the person is going to faith healers because now after that process, Western science has said forget it. And that protection is going to let the person down. But it has chima. It's not chime, you see? Can't help them. Won't help them. They will die. Soon. Can't protect them. That's not a kind of protection. Going to that kind of protection, even medicine, surgical procedures, you know, they can't protect you. Okay? And they fail. The second one is lua. They fail. They let you down. Lua means they fail you. You always hear this thing, the three jewels are unerring. What's unerring mean? You know, like they don't make mistakes on their computer or something. It doesn't mean that. Err in the Tibetan lua means they let you down. They let you down. People put their hopes in money. You know, you're very aware of security when you're out doing a three-year retreat in the desert. You just become very aware of security. There were two rattlesnakes under our deck a lot during most of the retreat, you know. We were just out in the open, like, if any intruder came, like, hunters were wandering around. One retreat almost got shot by a hunter. There were, drug runners coming through the property at the beginning. And you had this, you just felt like being out there in the middle of nowhere with no money, no place to buy anything, no clothes. We didn't have, you know, we just had one pair of clothes or two pair of clothes. Like, you just feel this very thing that you're not secure. You don't have security. And then you in the beginning of the retreat, you have this hunger for a job. And this hunger for a family. And this hunger for the ability to talk to friends. or at least to consume something, like French fries, milkshake, TV show, latest video, the new CD. You just consuming makes you feel like you're somebody. You know, consuming makes you feel like you have some security. And you take that away from people, they almost went crazy. We almost went crazy, you know. And what she comes to is you don't have any security. And this Chime means this coin chong, that kind of security doesn't let you down. It's the only real security you have. Emptiness. And the perception of emptiness. And the possibilities raised by that nupa. It's the real only security. The only real security that we have. Okay? The rest is all just apparent, you know. The person I talked about has extreme has access to great amounts of money. And there's no security. Okay? So really, to be able to live in that ambiguity where you don't have any apparent security is a good Buddhist trait. It's a good Buddhist trait, you know. It's uncomfortable in some ways, but in another way, you're not lying to yourself, you know. There is no other security. And don't forget that we're talking security in the sense of what you will become, you know. You will become someone who doesn't let other people down. Doctors let other people down. Lawyers let other people down. Firemen let other people down. Police let other people down. People who don't really understand emptiness and karma let other people down. You want to become a refuge that doesn't let other people down. And that's why you want to become the Three Jewels. Did you have a question?
Yeah, is there something significant in the way you phrased they don't have the imperfection of being unable to protect you, as opposed to saying they have the ability to protect you?
Oh, yeah, no. Well, just that in the root text it says they don't have this bad quality, you see, of not being able to do something. So it's a double negative rather than a positive, but that's the way Lord Maitreya did it. Now, if you were to the background, you could ask people, why did he say Chime? Why didn't he just say something positive? You know, you could debate that with somebody. Okay. I think the implication is that other refuges do have Chi. If you think about it, it's a Mayinga. There's an implication that there are other kinds of refuge which do let you down. And which, what was the first one? Unable to protect. Okay, same thing really. We'll do the third one and then we'll take a break. Sarah took a break already.
You said there are two imperfections?
Yeah, one was not being able to protect others. And second was letting people down in this. And oftentimes that means like inconsistent results. Inconsistent, like you can't trust what's going to happen. Say two.
Then.
Two. And then this particular combination of letters, which you'll learn in your Tibetan class wherever we're going, is what we call prenasal. So you don't say just then. You say then. You say then. So when you stick what we call an open vowel, which means an A-E-R-A-R-E-U-A-O at the end of a syllable, before an N sound, it gets really strong. Tunden. Like Gunden. There's no N in the word gun in the middle of the word Gunden. It's just what we call this prenasal effect, like tense, you know? Or this nasal effect. So you say tunden, say tunden. Tu means power in the sense of magnificent, fantastic, mystic power. Okay? It's a very beautiful word. To do a tu on somebody means to curse somebody. Tu gyap means to put a curse on or a spell on somebody. Okay? Kok la tu gyapcha. If you see Pabon Korpache's pictures in his early life, he's like this thin, handsome guy. If you see his pictures in his later life, he's like weighs 300 pounds or something. And they say Tugyap, somebody did a Tugyap on him. He had like a spiritual fight, like a wizard, with some evil forces. And he won, but at our cost. And they were able to Tugyap him. And then he almost died, like his body just totally changed. And that's called Tu. So Tunden means the three jewels have this incredible mystic force, mystic power. Here, Gyaltabje starts, actually in the last one, in the second one, he starts calling the three jewels, he doesn't call them Koinjo, he calls them Yishin Norbu. What's Yishin Norbu? Chintamani.
Wisdom jewels?
What's Chintamani? What does it mean? What's Chintam mean?
Chitta means mind, like bodhicitta. Chinta means wish, whatever you wish for, whatever you could think of. So Chintamani means a wish-giving gem. And this is a story in Tibet and India that Chintamani means there's a special jewel that if you find it, and then you put it through this washing process, like you have to wash it, like rock tumbling, but it's some kind of mystic water, like, you know, like holy water, and you have to bathe it in this holy water, and then you dry it off, and then you bathe it again, and then you dry it off, and then you bathe it again. You do all these bathing rituals. Then you have to set it in a special place, like on the top of a flagpole called a tol, and then you have to pray to it, and you have to do certain rituals, and then it becomes a wishing jewel. So at this point, Gyaltsebje starts talking about wishing jewel, and he mentions when you say chi mei, which means what?
Stain.
No more stain, no imperfection. He says, see, the wishing jewels start to wash. We're starting to wash this wishing jewel. Wishing jewels have been well washed. And they also have two. They have two. Why? Why do they have some fantastic power? Wishing, a normal wishing jewel. They give you anything you want. It's like an Aladdin's lamp. You know, the genie comes out, you rub it, the genie comes out, you say, I want a big lemonade for break, you know, and a cookie. Let's see. And then just, boom, you got one, you see? Tinned in.
Damaged jewel.
Then Gyaltsebje says, the three jewels have two. They have mystic power because they have Munchet Drup. Munchet Drup means the six kinds of clairvoyance. Six kinds of clairvoyance. The most important of which is Shen Sem Shepa, which means the perfect ability to read other people's minds. Perfect ability to read other people's minds. And I said, you know, like, I think in the retreat, one of the main results of the three-year retreat was interesting. Like, I don't claim that we all could read what Chicky Lal was thinking about on her grocery list for that day. You know what I mean? But I'd say that everybody in the three-year retreat got this very marked ability to sense the emotions of the world at large and of the people around the retreat area, you know, and especially the other retreatants. I mean, if one retreatant had a bad night and couldn't sleep, none of us could sleep. You know, like after a certain time, it wasn't like you could read their thoughts or you could hear, oh man, I'm having a bad night or something like that, but you just felt uneasy and you couldn't sleep. And then you'd find out, you know, and then we'd start to place bets with who was it, you know. Like, and then next time we saw him at the break, we'd like, okay. September 4th, you remember the name? But you can develop it, you know, if you do good retreat, if you do sincere meditation, if you keep your practice well, you start to get it. And then by the time you become a jewel, one of the three jewels, you have a perfect ability to read other people's minds. And the idea is there that you can see their calm directly. What's calm?
Buddha nature.
Yeah. And calm can also mean their deep propensities. Deep propensities. Right? You can look at a student and say, okay, this student needs this right now. And it might be a bop on the head. Okay? And once you get to be once your abilities get advanced like that, then you might start acting strange towards students. You know? It might seem strange to other people. But you see the calm in them, you see what their propensity, deep, deep, deep seeds are, and then you're more able to do things that they need. And those won't be perceived by other people, and you will look strange. You know, your activities or your behavior towards them might seem strange. And that's why you get stories like Marpa or, you know, doing, they just, or even Lama Supaha or Ken Rinpoche Ha, they just, they're operating on a different perception of a person's needs because they see them much deeper. And then they might be doing like unusual tapke, skillful means to help that person. Okay. And if you don't have that, you can't be a good three jewel. So it's one of the things you have to start thinking about. You have to start thinking to stop relating to people on a superficial level. You know, oh, this person looks like they need a Coke right now. Or this person wants me to be nice to them right now. And you have to look deeper into their needs, way down into their needs, and see what they need right then. And sometimes it's hard. And the great lamas, I think, like Ken Rinpoche taught, he's not afraid to do something that's very hard on a student. I mean, I can speak from experience, having been the object for 20 years. Out of their compassion and seeing your come, they often ask you to do things that are very difficult for you, and which might even seem strange. And then, you know, 15 years later, you tell your students how great it was that this lama did this to you, you know, which I'm doing. Okay, so, but you should pray to gain that ability. It's like on the list of, it's on your list of things to develop. The ability to see deep within a student and see their real propensities and their real needs. Where can you hook them? You know, where can you turn, where's the crux in their spirit that you can turn and turn it up and make them a better person? Help them become a Buddha faster. And then sometimes it's a very unusual thing, right? We'll take a break and then we'll finish. Yeah.
Clairvoyance having to do with one of the six powers, understood, but I'm not sure how the six powers tie in with tuned in.
Yeah. Tuned means powerful. Tuned in means powerful. In the sense that they have the six kinds of clairvoyance. The most important which...
Buddhists possess these six powers.
Yeah. Okay. The most important of which is the ability to read other people's minds. Yeah. Okay, we'll take a break. Come back. Take a nice break.
Back from the prison that.
Yeah.
And we'll meet us there for a big party at the end.
Yeah, we have to be there. The style that week is on Thursday night, not Friday night, because we had planned to go to the prison in Douglas. So we'll be able to come in the afternoon and help with some of the takedown. And then we thought they have a big, like, barbecue, soy burger, soy dogs, etc. Because there won't be any kitchen left, hopefully. And then and then just sort of do a final, like, blessing of the plate.
Yeah.
And
say goodbye.
And we do have money in the retreat fund that we have to burn. I mean, that we have to that we can apply to this last party. Okay.
Yeah.
It'd be really nice to get an idea of numbers, and if someone has a vehicle like a truck that they can bring, and a trailer hitch.
I think mine is a trailer hitch actually.
Okay. So if people
we have access. We will probably be able to use that day of van.
Can we drive
that? That we can drive people back here if you need. I don't know if that helps.
Okay. They haven't registered it yet.
Sparkling grape wine.
Grape, 100% grape juice looks like wine.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10-ish. And if people could mention it to people that couldn't make it, or that left early, like Catherine,
yeah,
that'd be great.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Do you need any help before then?
Yeah, sure.
Rhetorical questions.
No, it's a great question. Yes, we do. We need all kinds of help.
Yeah. I just thought I would encourage him to say that so that
you can
hear it.
Yeah, and it doesn't have to be, it's not all physical labor. We need people to walk around with a little magnet on the wheels and get all the screws and stuff off. It's a lot of packing up.
Yeah.
What hours do you work?
It depends on the day, but we try to
10
practice
to 5.
In the morning.
10 to 5?
Yeah,
the worst part of the day.
It's usually
5 o'clock after you've been out there 6-7 hours.
I usually don't.
Yeah, if you come out at noon, then you can probably go till 7.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And Amber. Amber's the last
one.
Wherever she is.
It's anonymous as usual.
As usual.
Okay. What's number four?
It's too late.
Yeah. Okay, fourth quality of what?
Me.
Me. Okay. Say, Jigden.
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 Jigden means the world. The world, loka. And then gen means jewel or ornament, like alamkara. And again, Gyaltsepte is still on, and Master Maitreya, Lord Maitreya, is still on the image of a wish-giving gem. Wish-fulfilling gem. And the idea is that a wish-giving gem gives its owner the most precious thing in the world that they could wish for. The best thing in the world that they could wish for. And the three jewels give people the same thing in that they give them the highest thing that they could ever get, which is, normally we say, nirvana and enlightenment. Nirvana and enlightenment, those are two things. So in that way, the three jewels are like a wish-giving jewel also. Okay. To me, it kind of breaks down at the wishing part, though. Why?
Because you just can't wish.
Most people can't even frame the concept of what they're going to be. You know, most people can't even imagine. Like, if the wishing gem of the three jewels was limited to what you could think of, you'd be in trouble. It's beyond what you could think of. But beyond that, it's a pretty nice thing.
Jigden means world ornament? Is that what I become, a world ornament?
Yeah, sort of you mean like a gem
right.
For the whole world in the sense that you give them the highest things in the world. And if you said because you give them the highest thing they could ever wish for, I think you could have a debate. You see? Because they can't even frame the idea. Mm-hmm. We're number five, right?
Yes.
Okay. Say, Chokni.
Chokni.
Chokni. This is the Chokka coin chok, right? If you think about it, the last four have only been talking about jewels or kon, really, rare. But here they get the chok part. The chok part comes out in this one, five. So Chokni means infinitely supreme. The ni means really, really supreme. The supreme of the supreme, highest supreme. And for this, you need the story of the chemical bank bankruptcy. like at one point, I had all these gemology degrees, and then people would the Supreme Court of New York City, Manhattan called me and said, "Will you testify a thing about jewels?" You know, and I said,
sure, you know, how much money? No, okay. And a company went bankrupt, a loan company. And they had themselves borrowed money before they went bankrupt on the basis of having a whole safe deposit box full of diamonds. So they borrowed so much money from the bank on the basis of this box of diamonds. So then they went bankrupt. So then the Supreme Court calls me in and says, will you assess the value of the diamonds in the safe deposit box? So I said, yeah, but there's one thing they taught you in gemology school was I want a lawyer sitting next to me to see if I switch anything or anything goes wrong or, you know, they teach you that, you know. So I said, I want, so okay, we had a lawyer and two lawyers sitting next to me. And we go down in the basement of the chemical bank and they take out this, like we go in the vault, it's this huge thing. And then they take out the safe deposit box and they put it on the table. And I start going through the, I spread them out, all the gems, the diamonds on the table. You put them all top down. Then you pick them up with these special tweezers and then you start using this special eyeglass. And the whole room is like quiet, totally silent. Like these people are wondering how much they've been burned for, if they've been burned or, you know, how much is the loss going to be? You know? And I'm like this, you know. And then he says, what do you think? And I said, they're all fake.
Oh my God.
You know, 100% cubic zirconians. You know? And I'm like thanking gemology school for telling me I have a lawyer next to me. Yeah. You know? And a funny thing happened. The lawyer came up to me afterwards. He said, what are you going to do? What should we do with those diamonds? You know? I said, throw them out. They're worth 20 cents each, 10 cents each. You know? And he looks at me and he says, could you make me some earrings out of this? I'm like, okay, you paid for the $20 gold mounting, I'll put them in there, you know? Yeah, my wife will love it, you know? Okay. And so we made earrings for everybody's lives, you know? That were fake. And, but you know that feeling that they got the moment I said cubic zirconium, you know? The feeling that you get, that you have a box full of useless paste, nothing, you know? That's what Chogni. Chogni means the real thing. Chogni means the real thing. Highest compared to fake. Highest compared to fake. Not the real thing. Okay? Money, intelligence, health, beauty, friends, education, military power, living in the best country. It's all fake. It's just nothing. It means nothing. Okay? Can't protect you at all. You know, people found that out while we were in retreat, right? I think there's this huge wave that we feel that you don't know about, you know? We see this wave. You know, we see a wave that I don't think you can really be aware of because you were in it, you know? But those of us that were in retreat, we see this wave passing through the world. It's a very strange and malevolent wave. And it's this, also this feeling of panic almost, at a very deep level. And people are just confronted with the fact that this are not refuge. Those big buildings and all that economic power and military power and security and secure borders by two oceans and all that is not, that's not security. That's fake. And these gems are like the real thing. The jewels are like the real thing. Like they can protect you. They will protect you. The knowledge of emptiness and karma and how to keep your vows is the only thing that can protect anybody, period. And the three jewels have to help people learn that, do that. So you have to think about becoming real security for people. Real security. You can offer people real security. The only real security in the world is that each one of us has the nupa, right, the ability to see that we can create the world according to our what we do towards others, because the world is empty, and that makes you a real refuge. Mm-hmm. That makes you can really help people. Of all the people, like in Tucson on October 10th, we've been to the normal refuges. We went to the doctor. We had X-rays. We went to the dentist. We had our eyes checked. We went to the bank. We went to the post office. We went. There's no refuge there, you know. So for a short time, a few real refugees are going to be in Tucson at the Y, teaching. And then you have to, like, really get this text right, and you have to get this teaching right in your mind and strong, and then you become a real refuge for somebody, real protection, real service organization. Number six. I'm going to go way over today. Nobody minds, right? Okay. Say gyurme.
Gyurme.
Gyurme means to change. Gyurme means unchanging. It's a common name in the Kagyu tradition. Like Gyurme Dorji would be a common name. A good friend of mine, Kagyu, named Gyurme Dorji. Unchanging. I would translate it in this context as unwavering. Unwavering. And Gyaltsep Jay says, look, if you have one of those wish-giving gems, it doesn't matter whether the owner is nice to it or not, right? Like, it'll still give you your wish. That wish-giving gem is not like an Aladdin's lamp in the sense that the wish-giving gem doesn't matter how you treat it. Like, you can call the wish-giving gem a dumbhead, or you can call it a genius. The wish-giving gem doesn't care, right? It just gives you your wishes. Just like that, now you fill in the rest for me. Metaphor. For what? Three jewels don't care. You can abuse the three jewels as much as you want. They will still do all they can to help you. Okay? They're unwavering in that sense. Okay? They don't care whether you to say something nice to them or whether you try to diss them or anything like that. And as you become more and more of a teacher, then you'll find that you'll have to develop this quality. Okay? Like, there are everybody's. You are empty. Everybody will have a different perception totally based on their own karma. So you will be perceived differently by every student you ever have. And throughout history, that's always been the case. Lord Buddha was the victim of several assassination attempts. You know, we spoke about His Holiness has been the object of uncountable assassination attempts. And that's just the way it happens. People will perceive you differently. And some will treat you good and some will treat you bad, but you have to be gyurme. And then later, when you become one of the three jewels, you're really gyurme. In that, you don't care. You just keep serving, keep helping, keep doing what other people need, no matter how they treat you. And that's one of the qualities of one of the three jewels. Gyaltsep Jay throws in something else, you know? Three jewels, especially the Dharmakaya, is gyurme in another sense. Like what? It's takpa, meaning unchanging, meaning, yeah, because it's emptiness. Not because it's empty, careful.
Emptiness.
Yeah, you get a big debate. Yeah, so emptiness. So Gyaltsep Jay, being one of the greatest debaters in Tibetan history, says, yeah, but don't forget it. We want to become gyurme in the sense of being the Dharmakaya. Pure emptiness, sheer emptiness. And when you see, you know the story I told you many times, when you see emptiness directly, you come out of it and you realize that the emptiness you saw includes the Dharmakaya of the Buddha. You've met, in that sense, you've met the Buddha. You've confirmed the existence of a Buddha by meeting that emptiness directly. Okay. Oh, there's a little section where Gyaltsep Jay discusses the idea of cause refuge and result refuge. And I just thought we should, it's in course number two, I think.
Yeah.
But I thought I'd throw in what he says. So we're going to go a little bit. Say Gyuri.
Gyuri.
Kyamdo.
Kyamdo.
Debu.
Debu.
Kyamdo.
Kyamdo.
Again, those of you studying Tibetan, you see the prenasal here, which is because of this ah. Okay, and it just got corrupted in modern Tibetan to Kyamdo. So I want you to be able to speak it properly if a Tibetan met you and you said, if you said Kyabdo, it would sound funny to them. Say Kyamdo.
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 And a Kamba, a Kagyu would say what? Kyamdo. Kyamdo. A Ladaki would say Skyabgro. A Mongolian would say Skyabgro. Okay. Here?
Yeah.
Kyamdo. In Pasa dialect. Which is the right one, right? Okay. David Kyamdo. And as I said, Michael, when we were talking about it in class, I always get mixed up about which is which. This is cause refuge. Cause going for refuge. Dro means to go. Gyu means cause. Kyab means protection or refuge. Okay? Causal going for refuge. To remember, if you want a trick for remembering it, you are going for refuge to the cause of your enlightenment, which is other people. You see what I mean? Just people outside of you. Like Shakyamuni Buddha, who's already Buddha. They're going to cause you to get enlightened. That's the way I remember it. Okay? It can be confusing. You're going for refuge to the cause, meaning someone who can teach you what to do to get enlightened yourself. Then Debu means result. Debu means result. And that's the opposite. Going for cause in the result of your own efforts to get enlightened, which is yourself as a Buddha in the future. And just as a practical exercise, and I'm suggesting that at the YMCA, or those of you who teach this in other places like South Africa or whatever, that you might want to, during the whole series of lectures, get people to do meditation in which they are focusing on the omniscient being that they are to become, watching them focusing on the omniscient being that they are to become. It's a very interesting exercise. Winston the Buddha, if you're not a Buddha already, I don't know, is watching this class at this moment. Because they see all three times at the same moment, right? So Winston the Buddha is watching Winston, studying about Winston the Buddha who's going to watch Winston. And to me that's very powerful. Like I could sit by myself alone in my room sometimes, and I'll open a book and I'll just look up and I'll say, I'm working on it, you know. And like sometimes I talk to myself, who's watching me? You know, and it's a very powerful exercise. You know, I mean, then people think you're really crazy. You know, it's another thing on your list of why you're crazy, right? But it can be very powerful. You just sit quietly. You can go out, walk down near the water, spring, and you can just sit there and talk to the Buddha you're going to be. So, you know, you're probably laughing at all the stupid stuff I'm doing right now. You know, you're probably mad at me because I didn't get there as fast as I was supposed to. And maybe you could just send me a few grace of help, like grace, inspiration, you know, help me out here. I'm trying, you know. And sometimes I just do that. I just talk. They're watching. I'm watching me, right? Already. So, yeah.
So every single being in this room could be an emanation of my future Buddha.
That's true too. She said everybody in this room could be an emanation of my future Buddha.
Yes.
I don't know. We have to talk about that. That's a debate for the debate round. The only reason I bring this up is that there's a neat little part in Gyaltsebje's commentary which is, look, us Tibetan Lamas didn't make this idea up. Okay, we didn't make this up. This is taught in the Utthaya Tantra, and that comes from an ancient scripture called the Sutra requested by Ugra.
This is where the result and cause of refuge
come
up. Okay.
Yeah. Like he says, Tibetan Lamas like to do this in the early scriptures. They're like, we didn't make this up, this comes from India. Because to them, India was the place of the Aryas, right? Pampayuna. You know, they said, we didn't make this up. This idea comes from the ancient scriptures. It's found in the Utthaya Tantra. And it comes from the sutta requested by the, I think it's a bodhisattva named Ugra. Drakshul Chen in Tibetan. Okay. And then Gyaltsebje quotes that scripture. And I've put it in your reading, if you ever get it. And I'm still working on the first reading. It's really long. It's like turned out like 25 pages. But it was fun. And in that, I want to tell you about that sutra. What the Ugra is called Kimdak. Kimdak means householder. It means this bodhisattva was not a monk. And this lay person named Ugra asked Lord Buddha, how do we take refuge? You know, what is it like when you say we should take refuge? Well, what is it to take refuge? And Lord Buddha says, a bodhisattva who is a householder, right? And he's specifically talking about normal people, right? He's saying, but any bodhisattva. First he says bodhisattva, and then he says specifically bodhisattvas who are householders, lay people. He says, you see the marks of a Buddha. You see what I look like, right? He says, right, I see. And then he says, the moment you just get in your mind, I would like to be like you. You know, I would like to be like you. and you see yourself in the future like me, you've taken refuge. That's refuge. That's taking refuge. He said, to me, that's very beautiful. He says, that's the source for this teaching. Because really, you got both in there, don't you? You have Gyukyamdo and Gebukyamdo. You're looking at a Gyukyamdo. You're seeing what they look like and what they do. And then because of that, you're taking Gebukyamdo. You're imagining what you're going to be like. And you're wanting to be like that. So the desire, which implies imagining yourself as a Buddha in the future, to become a Buddha as you look at the Buddha, is what it means to take refuge. And to me, that's very powerful. It's not like, what did we hear? Where was that place?
Travesty.
How'd it go? We were in Travesty. We met some Theravadan. How'd it go, that little tune?
Yeah, I
know. And then it went this beautiful song, you know. But just to sit there and think about an image of Lord Buddha, or just, you know, that's not it. In that scripture, it specifically states, you are visualizing what you will become, and that's taking refuge. And I love that. I think that's really neat. It's almost tantric in a way. Okay, this is not the last question, but you don't know I have 6 parts. We finished now. We talked about the 7 diamond visions as a whole, and then we talked about the first 3 as a whole, meaning the 3 jewels. Now we started the process of going through them one by one. We go through the 7 one by one. That'll take the rest of the course, and it takes the rest of the entire time track. Okay? I don't think I mentioned, or I mentioned and I didn't finish it. The first 4 of the 7 diamond visions are the subject of the first chapter. Which order of the 7 diamond visions?
The first order,
right. Meaning Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, and then?
Kama.
Your Buddha nature. That's why the first chapter is called the chapter on Buddha nature. Yeah, it's called the chapter on Buddha nature. It's interesting that Maitreya did that. He didn't make it 7 chapters, he made it shorter. So somehow your future Buddhahood, your future Dharmahood, your future Sanghahood, and your ability to become that, your potential to become that, he treats them all in 1 chapter. So the first chapter is like half the book. Then he does the next 3 of the diamond visions, which are number 3.
Yeah,
Buddhahood outside you.
Yinten,
the qualities of that Buddhahood. And then Tinley, meaning the most important quality, which is that they can come to you and teach you.
Okay.
Activity. So those form the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th chapters of the book. But I forgot to tell you, I think there's a 5th chapter. He's through in a 5th chapter. And it's just called Penyin Shepa. It means explaining the benefits. I didn't read it yet. It probably means a small chapter where he explains the benefits of this book or something like that. But just so you know, there's 5 chapters like that.
Explaining the benefits?
Yeah, it's just called the chapter on explaining the benefits. Which they often throw into books to sell them to people. But I don't know why I put it at the end. But anyway, now we're going to talk about the Sangye Kwoncho, the jewel of the Buddha, the Buddha jewel. Now we're on to the 1st of the 7, and that's what we're going to do the rest of today. And we're going to go through the 6 qualities that that Buddha jewel has. So we already did 6 qualities of what? The 3 jewels in general. Now we're going to 6 qualities of the Buddha jewel in particular. And this is a very, very famous verse from the Uttara Tantra. It's often quoted in the monastic textbooks, like all over the place. Like this is one verse that everybody would learn. Dhammacheshe Hindu. You know, Chesamayacha. I mean, you quote that all the time in the monastery. So I thought, I'm trying to emphasize the quotations that are most, and the ideas that are most used in an actual monk's training from the Uttara Tantra. Again, we don't study Uttara Tantra separately. We study Abhisamayamkara for 12 years. But the Uttara Tantra comes up a lot. So here's one of the most famous verses. And hang in there. It's gonna go long today, and maybe it's a little warm. But we have to work like this, or we'll never get things done. So sorry for about this kind of thing. You have to go late, and you have to work hard and get it on the first try. You know, like you have to go home and really work on it. Because if you wait to the end, which is 1 week before the October classes, you probably won't be able to teach very well. Okay. So if you start planting bok choks now, they'll be all fresh by the time. They'll start sprouting by October. Say, Dumache.
Dumache.
Dumache, as we said before, means...
Unproduced.
Unchanging. Unproduced. Yeah, you can say unproduced. Unproduced. By the way, there's a translation, they use what's it called? No, they say uncomposed.
Yeah.
Or something like that. That's completely wrong. Okay, just throw that translation out. They say uncomposed or something like that. If they misunderstood the meaning of Dumache in Sanskrit, okay? Space is composed of parts, but it's unchanging. See, so that's a bad translation. But anyway, Dumache means unproduced, meaning doesn't have causes. Doesn't mean it never happened, right? Obviously. Dumache implies that the thing already exists, but it did not have a cause. It's either always been there, or it's not caused in the sense that there are not energies put into it which fluctuate. It's always the same. It's always the same, Dumache. To understand this, we need to talk about what you're going to be like when you become a Buddha. Okay? So, me, the Buddha. You got to think like that, you know? Like when you do yoga, you have this idea about how you're going to look at the end, right? Maybe. And when you study this class, you should have this idea of what you're going to be like. So we're going to go through what should you be like. You're going to have mainly two different bodies, which just means two different parts of you, okay? Which are what?
Rupakaya, Dharmakaya.
Nice. Let's call it the truth body. Well, I call it Dharma body, okay? That's me. And the form body. And you know there's three ways of, I mean, you can divide the bodies into three, you can divide them into four. We're doing it two today. And the entire chapter is one of the places where you see all those divisions. Dharma body itself can be divided into two. Anybody want to take a shot?
Emptiness and omniscience.
Yeah. The emptiness and omniscience. Right? Oh, let's call it wisdom, yeah. Emptiness means... I'm sorry. I'm going to change this. We call it essence body. Which is Ngo Nyiku in Tibetan. This one is changing or unchanging, the wisdom. Changing every moment. I mean, when you see somebody making pancakes 2,000 years from now, you know, and the bubble comes up to the top, the wisdom changes. The image in the mind changes. When the bubble comes up and pops, there's two different images. Therefore, this mind is changing. Okay?
But you're seeing it at the same time, aren't you?
Yeah, you do see it all at the same time. Even changing more again. That's a huge debate in my opinion. Huge debate. Is there change in a Buddhist perception? But the change of it is a phenomenon also, right? So they perceive that. But if you think about it, at any given time, you're seeing all the stuff in the universe that ever was, is, and will be, always the same.
Well, at the same time.
But their time frame is changing from our point of view. But that's another point. Anyway, essence body is purity. They call it purity. Dhaka, namdak, means purity. Purity in the sense of being devoid of something. Okay? Two kinds of devoids of something. Natural and achieved. Natural and achieved. Got it?
Mm-hmm.
Now let's go back to the first quality of Buddha. By the way, we now have, down at the bottom now we have one, we have two, we have three. Of the six qualities of a Buddha, the first three relate to this side. The first three relate to the Dharma body. Okay? Of the six qualities of the Buddha jewel that you will become, the first three relate to the Dharma body. Of the six qualities of the jewel of the Buddha that you will become, the second three relate to the form body. And roughly, it's over. In debate, we always start with roughly, or most of the time, or mostly, and then you don't get in trouble when somebody comes up with an exception. You say, oh, I started with roughly. Okay, but roughly, this whole side of real Buddhahood accomplishes the ultimate needs of yourself. This side of your whole Buddhahood is the accomplishment of your own ultimate goals. Which means that the other side is the ultimate accomplishment of others' goals. Which makes sense, right? You need to take form to help other beings. Okay? Very few beings can perceive a Buddha directly, right? I mean, how many people can see the Dharmakaya directly?
Aryas.
You gotta be an Arya. Or have to have been an Arya, right? And when there's a debate at the end of the first reading, I threw it in. They're debating what kind of Arya were Nagarjuna, Asanga, and Maitreya. The first level, third level, tenth level, there's an argument about it. The point is it's that rare. Maybe there have been three Aryas in Indian Buddhism. Something like that. I mean, you have to realize that it's that kind of thing. Okay. So to really take care of, finish your own needs, you have to have a Dharma body. To really take care of other people's needs, you have to be able to emanate a form body. The essence body is the emptiness half of the Dharmakaya. Okay? The emptiness of a Buddha. In a sense, that's the most important. Why? How could you? Why would it be appropriate to even call it kunchi? Tough question. Why would it almost be appropriate to call this emptiness of the Buddha kunchi?
You'd have to have very good seeds in your mind to be able to see that Buddha.
You could say that, but
it's the foundation of everything else.
What would a Gaudiya say? What would a Rinne say? And it's good. It's true, I think.
It's the source of it.
It's really the source. If you think about it, it goes back to what we said when we started today. Perfect students for this course, perfect students for this class. The only kind of students that would be interested in sitting out in the desert in this class for 4 hours, or however long it's going to take, right? They've got to have, what was I getting onto? They have to understand that it's emptiness that makes it up, nupa. It's the possibility that to become enlightened. And really, that's emptiness. So this becomes crucial. This particular emptiness becomes crucial. Actually, you should call this voidness, and I'll tell you why later. Well, I'll tell you right now. Okay? This is a kind of voidness of purity. But it's a voidness in two senses. One is natural voidness, one is achieved voidness. Natural purity and achieved purity. What's the difference between natural purity and achieved purity? Natural purity is the purity you've had all along. It's the Buddha nature you have right now. It's the emptiness of your body and mind. It's the availability for you to become anything in the universe as soon as you start keeping your vow book and your morning meditation. And do your 3-year retreat. We'll miss you, but we'll cook for you.
Say that one more time. Natural purity.
We'll miss you, but we'll cook for you.
I like that part. Natural purity refers to...
Yeah, the natural voidness that you've always had. Okay. The emptiness of your... That doesn't change from the beginningless time up to now and up into your Buddha. It doesn't change. That comes with you. And that's the only reason you become... That's connected back to that idea of potential or possibility that we talked about, nupa. Because you recognize that, you are a true student for this text, this teaching. What would an achieved purity be? It's like the work you've done to clean out your negativities.
Abandoning stains.
Yeah, like getting rid of your negativities. The absence of doubt in the mind of an Arya would be an example. Once you've seen emptiness directly, you can't doubt these scriptures anymore. You'd go crazy about them. That's achieved. Okay. But again, it's sort of an absence of something, right? So these two, natural and achieved purity, are still an absence of something. And then wisdom is just, I should call this wisdom, is what we call jitawa. By the way, we're not crossing this line, I just didn't have any place to put it. It's still over here on the Dhammakaya side. Okay. You can divide the understanding that you will have as a Buddha, right? You can divide it into two parts. Jitawa and Jinyepa. See, Jitawa?
Jitawa.
And Jinyepa.
Jinyepa.
Jinyepa is kind of hanging out over here. Okay. Say Jinyepa.
Jinyepa.
Jitawa.
Jitawa.
Jitawa means the ability of an enlightened being to see the true nature of all existing things. The true nature of all existing things. Jitawa means how they are. Jitawa means how they are. The way they are. That's nice, but you also need the ability to what? To see all those things themselves. That's a big difference. It's one thing to see all the things in the kitchen. It's another thing to see the true nature of all the things in the kitchen. Okay?
And that's what jitawa refers to, the true nature.
Yeah. Jinyepa means seeing all the things in the kitchen. Jitawa means seeing the true nature of all the things in the kitchen. Jitawa belongs on the Dharmakaya side. And in this presentation only, okay, Jinyepa is thrown in with the form body side. Okay? The ability to see all the things in the universe is thrown over here with the form body side. Which, if you think about it for 1 minute, you can figure out why he did that.
The Jinyepa is the form body, but not the Jitawa.
Jitawa is over here on the Dharmakaya side.
Jinyepa form.
Yeah. Okay. Because Jinyepa is seeing all the things in the universe.
Right.
Jitawa is seeing all their emptinesses, all their true natures. Why he does that, we'll talk about. Okay. Now we're ready to find out why the six are called the six. Okay. That. So we said Duma Chang meant unproduced. Unproduced. Why are you going to be unproduced when you're a Buddha? Alistair.
Because your lack of inherent existence.
Which one? Great. Quality number one is hanging out right here. That's why I did this whole Philly chart. The fact that you are still empty when you get enlightened. The fact that that's why you can be a Buddha at that point. Is it the kunshi, the foundation of everything you are in a way, is your natural emptiness, the one you've had all along. That's the first quality of the six that you're gonna have when you get enlightened. Gonna have? No debate? You're not gonna debate?
I have had it from the beginning.
I already have it, come on. Have you? Oh, so you already have that natural purity?
Duh.
Duh, good. Good. Ranshin Namakichak, you know me, yah! That's how you say it. Ranshin Namakichak. You still have that, you already have that natural purity, right? Which is to say you already have calm, right? Which is to say you already have Sugata Gavas, relationship to Nimbo. Which is to say you already have the seed which is going to turn into a Buddha. So a Buddha has a seed which is going to turn into a Buddha. Yeah. So a Buddha doesn't have Buddha nature. Good. So a Buddha doesn't have karma. Because you said they were the same.
Karma chong.
You said they were the same. Anyway, you can get somebody in trouble that way, okay?
Sure.
Go over the video, you'll figure it out. Okay, no, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. When I phrase it as seed to become a Buddha, relationship in Nimbo, the target, Tathagata Gama. Right? Yeah. Then you get in trouble. Then you got to be, wait a minute. You're talking about the Buddha seed which still has impurities. Remember that thing?
Yeah, calm, right.
Yeah, calm. And then you say, which calm are you talking about? You got to be careful. The whole point of debate is to get somebody onto a, you know, they say, that, and then he goes for it, and then he's like, in trouble, and then you jump
the corner.
Yeah, okay. Okay, second Buddha quality.
So this natural purity has abandoned that Buddhahood?
Oh, big debate. I don't think so.
Well, if the natural purity is the calm, and that defined as one's including nature surrounded by impurity.
Is it the cum?
Well, if it's purity, it can't be impure.
Right. Yeah.
So can it be calm if it's pure?
The question is it exactly equal to cum?
No.
I don't think so, right?
I don't think so.
Yeah. But you have to debate it. Okay. Say, Zunki. I don't think I gave enough time. Say, Zunki. Short. Short, what is that? Sundur. Like Lama Sundur in Kopan, right? This is the meaning of that name. Sundur means spontaneous. Zunki Durba means happened like in a thum. Like thum. It just means whoop. You know, Sunki Durba means happen. Sunki Sun means whoop. You know, just means happen like that. It refers to the spontaneous ability of an enlightened being to go and reach all other beings and help them. Sunki Durba. Sunki Durba. No premeditation. Not even any discursive or conceptual thought. No idea, I have to go to planet Earth now and help those people. You just appear there automatically. Sometimes I like to translate Sungi Drupa as automatic. Okay? Automatically. Do you want to debate me on something? She looked like I'm waiting for somebody. What's about here? Nothing raises a question? Huh?
Which side of the road is
it? Yeah, it's on the wrong side. I said the first three were going to be on the
left side.
Left side. This one's got to be on the
right side.
I busted my brain about this all morning. Then I read Gyaltsa Dream more carefully. And it's very beautiful. There's a very, very, very subtle mental affliction. Or you almost can't call it a mental affliction. But at the very, very final stages of your path, just before you get enlightened, you get rid of an extremely subtle bhakcha that infects your mind. Just when you think to do something, the intention to do something, like the idea to move my arm from here to here, right? There's some kind of trigger thought in my mind. There's some kind of impulse thought in my mind. And there's something very, very subtly self-existent about that.
I am
very, very subtle. Extremely subtle. It's called like one of the final negativities that you ever remove on the way to Buddhahood. And when you remove that, you can consider yourself purified. That can be considered achieved purification. I'll say it again. When you get rid of the very, very subtle seeds of seeing things as self-existent that infect the decision to act itself, you reach what we call achieved purity. When you get rid of that final one, we can say that you have the achieved purity, meaning the one you had to work for, as opposed to the natural purity. Okay, got it? I'll say it one more time. Apparently, what the most final self-existent thought you have, one of the last ones, is the self-existence which infects the decision to act, to do anything. Like just even to pick up a pen and the decision to say a word. There's something very subtly more... Let's say you're more vulnerable to seeing things as self-existent the moment you decide to act. Okay. Now, you can debate that a lot and you can have a lot of wrong ideas about that. Does it imply that we shouldn't think to act? Does it imply that we shouldn't act? You know? We've got to be really careful about that. I think one of the mental afflictions that could infect you at the final moment is the belief that I am picking up the pen. Whole cause and effect thing. Like, I go to the dentist to fix my tooth. Is that what fixed my tooth?
No.
You see? I drive to Tucson, 4 hours there and back, 5 hours. to have some guy drill my tooth. Is that what fixes my tooth? See, I make a decision to get in the car. I make a decision to start the car. I make a decision to go. That whole process is infected by the belief that it's the dentist who's fixing my tooth. Okay? Very subtle, extremely subtle. It infects everything we do. Is the way to get negative people out of my life to avoid them. You see? Is that the way to get rid of the people around me that hurt me or who are irritating to me? You see? It's all wrapped up in worldview. So, once you get rid of that final seed of thinking to do anything for self-existent reasons, you no longer get in the car because you believe the dentist is self-existently going to fix your teeth. Okay? Then you achieve a kind of purity. It's not a purity that you've had
natural.
All along, or natural. Where is it here? Yeah, here. Okay.
But it's spontaneous too.
Well, it's spontaneous in that major, in that sense. You see? So Gyaltabje is saying, if you want to know why Lord Maitreya didn't stick spontaneous help of others over here, it's because when he said spontaneous, he was talking about doing things with ultimately pure worldview. The achieved purity, the voidness of the final wrong idea, is so beautiful. It's really beautiful. Of course, spontaneously helping others belongs over here. But in the sense that it involves the final understanding that things are empty, it belongs over here. And that's where he puts it, okay? That's a tough point. You've got to go over that. I mean, it's an exciting point, but you've got to go over it, okay? Okay. Third one. Yeah, it's nice. Maybe we've got to move some of those appointments after. Yeah. I just want to roll through these and not worry about how late it's going to be, okay? I never know when I write a class how long it's going to take to teach it, okay? So. I think the more is better
nowhere.
Than less, right?
Rather than the middle of nowhere, it was
going yeah. Okay. I'm also shortening them a bit to make it easier. Say Shenken.
Shenken.
Tokmin.
Tokmin.
Shenken.
Shenken.
Tokmin.
Tokmin.
Shen means other. Like Dakshin Nyamje, exchanging self and other. Other. Ken is Ken as in Gyuen Ken, Ambersan.
Factor
as opposed to the main cause. Like contributing cause. Dok with a sa means what, Ambersan? Without the sa, it means what?
Wrong idea.
Careful, yeah? Be very careful. Without the sa, it means wrong idea. With the sa, it means right idea.
Talk is wrong idea.
And the pronunciation is exactly the same.
Talk.
Yeah. Here it means right idea. Realization. Like window gim. Right? So when you debate, you got to be damn careful with this. Double mimbata! I'm a guy who leads you on for 20 minutes and then suddenly tell you, oh, I was spelling it without the sa. Like he covers himself either way, right? It's very cool. But it can be very confusing. And we're reading a text which is badly typeset, and the guy leaves out the stuff sometimes, and it's really trouble. Min means?
Not.
Okay. So what do we got so far? Not realized through the factor of another. Not realized through the factor of another. This is referring to a Buddha's wisdom and specifically their ability to see the true nature of all things. This is referring to a Buddha's wisdom and specifically their ability to see the true nature of all things. Let's go back to that chart. Where are you going to put that?
Having to do with wisdom.
Yeah? Chitao wisdom.
Chitao
wisdom. Over here. You know? Chitao wisdom. The wisdom which perceives the emptiness of all objects. Chitao. Chitao. That wisdom is Shengi Ken Chitao Minpa. Shengi Ken Tok Min. Shengi Ken Chitao Minpa. Okay? not realized through an influence of another. Not realized through the influence of another. Okay. That has two meanings. Who wants to take a shot at one of them? Tadarteva. There's another one. Tadarteva. Dushyasyatma. Tadevata Dushyasyatma. In the Yoga Sutra. It's very beautiful. Tadarteva Dushyasyatma. That thing can only be described by the person who has seen it. Huh? Yeah, but in what way? But where does the other come in? Chengi kengi to. It's not something you can realize through influence of the other. Meaning what?
You have to personally realize.
Yeah, it's indescribable. It's jirimepa. Indescribable. Like a person who has seen it directly can describe it to you. In fact, Yelta Day has a big debate about whether you can describe it. He says indescribable means can't be described, right? The guy says, right. So he says, nobody can describe it, right? That's right. Just the Lord Buddha didn't write 4,000 scriptures, right? You know, so it is shame you can't be told me, Bob. But not, it's not like someone can tell you and then you just see it directly. That's impossible, okay? So in that sense, jitao, the ability of the Buddha to see the true nature of all things, cannot occur through the influence of another person. It's not like someone can tell you what it's like and then you can just, boom, do it. Okay. But then Gyaltabje says, Shen can also refer to discursive thought, discursive perception, where you're forming words in your mind, where you're using mental words, mental sentences to perceive this thing. Oh, you know, like that. It has to be what? Chitta can't be, it has to be direct, non-discursive. Totally direct communion with emptiness. 24/7. Towards every object that ever was, is, and will be.
So that's Shen, other discursive.
Yeah, so Gyaltabje says Shen can mean two things. Other can mean another guy. But other can mean other than direct perception. Meaning words. Mental words, using words. Okay? Now we're on to the three I think we should take a break. Does anybody need... Would you guys rather go on and finish, or would you rather take a break? At least one person wants to go on and not take a break. So let's go on. I'll try to do it real fast there. We're on to the three qualities that relate to...
Form of the body.
Yeah, which is helping mainly other people. Right. Oh, these I've known in my time. Okay. What do you call it? Hang on. Say Kimba.
Kimba.
If you don't know other people are suffering, or if you can't see all the beings in the universe who are suffering, then you can't help them. Right? So first you have to have Kimba. Kimba means knowledge. Kimba means knowledge. Well, we'll talk about it. Like we didn't know that the World Trade Center was blown up, right? And so, we didn't have Kemba about all the people who got killed or hurt. And it was some of our friends, you know? And so we couldn't undertake any actions to help them, because we just didn't perceive them. You see what I mean? We didn't know that people were hurt. We didn't know then that anyone needed help. So one of the first qualities you're going to need to be a good Buddha jewel is Kemba about all the people in the universe who are suffering. You've got to have that. Now if you happen to divide the knowledge of a Buddha into that which perceived the true nature of all the things in the kitchen, and that's what you perceived all the things in the kitchen, where would you put this one?
That would be where Jinyepa.
No, but now I'm talking about all the things in the kitchen.
Oh.
All the sentient beings who are suffering, not their true nature, would be where? Jinyepa. I'm sorry, you're right. There we get number four. That's why he stuck Jnepa over with what?
The form body.
Yeah, even though it's not physical. It's mental. Okay, but that's why we throw it in over there. Okay, we should probably curve this dotted line over here, right? I mean, that belongs over here. Right? So we covered number four. What Jnepa means is all existing objects. The wisdom which can perceive all existing objects. Jnepa.
All
the stuff in the kitchen.
All conventionally existing objects.
Oh, wait, I'm going to debate you. Don't.
Sorry.
You just ruined a good debate, you know. Debating here. All the things in the kitchen. All right? The ability to see all the things in the kitchen. And Jitala is the ability to see the emptiness of all the things in the kitchen. Right? But more specifically, Jitala means the ability to see every existing object. Jnepa. Yeah. Now we're ready for debate, Michael. Would you mind? Jnepa yeshi chu chen. Chitan chi toa tan. Let's take Jnepa, the wisdom which perceives all objects. Ambition to the Buddha, man. Does it perceive all existing objects? Chitan chi toa tan. You can either say duh and agree, or you can say chi chi and disagree.
Duh.
Chitan chi toa tan. So it does perceive all existing objects, right?
Duh.
So, Tony Chimai Mata. So I guess Tony doesn't exist. Emptiness, Shinita doesn't exist, right?
I didn't say that.
Oh, so emptiness is not an object?
I didn't say that.
Oh, so emptiness is an object?
Yes.
But it doesn't belong to all objects?
Yes, it does.
Oh, so Jitawa sees. So Jnepa sees emptiness also.
I didn't say that.
But Jnepa doesn't see all existing objects.
I didn't say that.
So Jnepa does see all existing objects.
As defined, yes.
So poor emptiness doesn't get to be all existing in the group of all existing objects?
In this case, no.
Oh, that's a pretty good answer. But it just happens to be that the way Gyaltsa J fudges that was a different way than you fudged it. He said, look, obviously, this Jnepa sees all the objects in the universe. Obviously, the emptiness of all the objects in the universe is an object in itself.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously, Jnepa does see what Jitala sees. But it's a nice division anyway.
So why is this vision made?
It is not a vision. I mean, mostly, we describe this as perceiving the emptiness of all the things in the kitchen. Mostly, we describe this as perceiving all the things in the kitchen. But actually, technically, this perceives all the things in the kitchen, which includes the emptiness of all
the objects.
Alright, no fun. You guys are no fun. So we've covered four, right? Where is that? Oh. Fine. And you should always put this shape after a word. Just, that's the way it's done. Say, Sewa.
Sewa
means love or concern. Okay? Love or concern. And this is the way the logic goes in the modern monastic scriptures, you know? For one thing, if you didn't know that all these people got hurt, you can't help them or you can't feel any concern for them, right? So first you have to have a perception of all the people who got hurt, right? Kimba, number four. You have to know that there's people who are hurting. Either through direct or indirect means, you have to perceive that every single living creature in the universe is suffering. Okay? But if you don't have sewa, you won't want to do anything about it. Okay, that's the logical progression. Love. Care, concern. You have to think to do so. You know, you have to be concerned. Okay? You have to be concerned. You have to want to do something. Uh-huh. That's sewa. So which side would we throw it in on Rupakaya Dhammakaya? Where is that?
That's interesting.
Does it go over here or over there? Oh, sewa Rupakaya Yimata. So love is part of Rupakaya.
that what you mean by...
Pardon. Come on, he's a lawyer, I'm forgetting. Good training for a debater. Gandhi is the greatest lawyer, right? So Sewa means...
Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah? It's love, meaning... Oh, so we can throw it on over on the physical side of things, in the sense that you got to have love to want to emanate all this love, right? But it's no use to have to know what's happening and to care about it if you don't have shakti. So that new shakti. We had a nupa before today, right? Which was understanding the possibility of the power. This is a different nupa. This one is shakti. Okay? Meaning what?
Energy.
Yeah, energy or power. It's no use if you have jnana, if you know that everyone's in trouble. It's no use if you have sewa, which is what I forgot. Anyway, love. If you don't. What is that? I don't know. I think it is. Oh, the Sanskrit for this sewa is karunya, which is a little bit different from yingjin, which is karuna. So, just so you know, the number five is karunya, which is a little different.
Okay.
Your Sanskrit teacher will go to that. The nupa is shakti, power. It's no good to know that everybody in the World Trade Center was hurt. It's no good to even be concerned about it, but you can't do anything about it, okay? And you can help them, even now, if you understand Dharma, okay? You can help them, even now, if you understand Dharma, okay? But mainly this is talking about, if you can't see all that all beings in the universe are suffering, you can't help them. If you don't care that they're suffering, even after you know that they're suffering, that doesn't count either. But if you have power, shakti, if you have the power to do something about it, then you're a real
Buddha.
Refuge, Buddha jewel, refuge. Then you can help people, then you are a shelter, then you are a protection. So really, we all have to aspire to those six qualities. And you've got to think about them all the time. You've got to think, you know, I'm going to have this quality, this quality, this quality. This chart has to be in your mind. I want all six of those qualities. I'm going to have all six of those qualities. And under here you could put, knows what's going on, cares about what's going on, can do something about what's going on, okay? Knows what's going on, cares about what's going on, can do something about what's going on, okay? You want to have all six qualities. You should go home, you should think about getting those six qualities. Becoming a Buddha jewel. Becoming the thing that every Buddhist in the world is taking refuge in. And even if people never heard of Buddhism, you'll become their refuge. You will emanate as a Sufi saint, or you will emanate as a person sitting next to them on the bus who irritates them. Or whatever it takes, according to their karma. Okay? Mm-hmm. That's all. So we'll finish there. I'm sorry I went on so long. And see you on Wednesday? Yeah. At which time we'll probably go over the Dharma Jewel, the next of the seven, right? Okay.
Homework
is done, but I didn't print it. So I'm sorry, we'll get it by email. Okay. And the quiz will be double quiz on Saturday. That doesn't mean you don't look at it. Don't forget to talk to somebody else about the class. This one's a lot of food for thought there. So, lots of things to debate about with your friend. Okay. Thank you. I don't know about you, but I start to get a real feeling about what could happen at Diamond Mountain. So, go for it. Help it happen.